All right, Wednesday evening, 4/20/22. No nonsense, look at the book of Revelation. This is part two of the day, year, rule. All right, let's turn to Daniel chapter 12. All right, start with verse 1 there. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on that side of the bank of the river. One said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand into heaven, or unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever, that it shall be for a time, times and half. And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. And I heard, but I understood not. Then said I, O my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go thy way, Daniel, for thy words are closed up and sealed to the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. But go thou thy way till the end be, for thou shalt rest and stand in the lot at the end of the days. I want to look at something right quick before we get into this. Right here, verse 2, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. I want to look, I think it's Revelation chapter 20. People ask, you know, people think, well, when are we have new bodies? When do, like, you know, it talks about the dead in Christ rising. Doesn't that sound like that? Many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. All right, Revelation 20. All right, verse 5 of 20 says, but the, all right, well, let's, wait a minute. Verse 5 says, but the rest of the dead live not again until the 1,000 years were finished. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection. On such the second death hath no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about in the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, shall be tormented day and night forever. And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works. The sea gave up the dead which were in it, and the death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged every man according to his works, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. Well, it says here, verse 1, there should be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. At that time thy people shall be delivered, everyone that shall be found written in the book. We just saw this. God opens the book. So that just caught my interest, because that indicates to me that after the Gog and Magog war is when everything's restored. And then chapter 21, verse 1 says, I saw a new heaven and a new earth. So maybe everything is to be restored at that time. New bodies, new heaven, new earth. It's just a thought. All right, when I was reading these verses, verse 11 and 12, since I went through all that, I'll read that again, 11 and 12. From the time the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,305 days. All right, I told you when I was reading that, the Holy Spirit said to me, they're not days, they're years. And that's what we've been looking at. All right, the futurism doctrine has caused such a misunderstanding by the church, our past, our present, and our future. We saw the history of the papacy and the trail of blood it has left behind. The saints' blood has been spilled and many brutalized by the Antichrist system. We're not waiting for a seven-year tribulation. The church has been in it throughout history. All right, I'm going to revisit the day-year rule. This is Ezekiel chapter 4. Ezekiel hides from me. Okay, 4. 4, 1 through 8. Thou also, son of man, take thee a tile and lay it before thee, and betray upon it the city, even Jerusalem, and lay siege against it, and build a fort against it, and cast them out against it. Set the camp also against it, and set battering rams against it round about. Moreover, take thou unto thee an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between thee and the city, and set thy face against it, and it shall be besieged, and thou shalt lay siege against it. This shall be a sign to the house of Israel. Lie thou also upon thy left side, and lay the iniquity of the house of Israel upon it, according to the number of the days that thou shalt lie upon it, thou shalt bear their iniquity. For I have laid upon thee the years of their iniquity, according to the number of the days, 390 days, so shalt thou bear the iniquity of the house of Israel. When thou hast accomplished them, lie again on the right side, and thou shalt bear the iniquity of the house of Judah 40 days. I have appointed thee each day for a year. Therefore thou shalt set thy face toward the siege of Jerusalem, and thine arm shall be uncovered, and thou shalt prophesy against it. And behold, I will lay bands again unto thee, and thou shalt not turn thee from one side to another till thou hast ended the days of thy siege. Okay. There's different places in Scripture that we looked at that shows, a day is a year, even 1,000 years as a day. So I want to read Revelation chapter 13 to you. This is the papacy, or the false prophet. Starting with verse 11 there. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb. You know the little dills they wear on their head? It's got the like a lamb, and he spake like a dragon. They always wear, white, the Pope. Anyway, and he exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. He doth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, that no man might by ourselves, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666. I have a book. I started reading it, and then I put it down. But anyway, it's all about the UFOs and all the stuff going on with the Vatican. It's all connected. And so, you know, he does all these wondrous things. They're pushing right now, or trying to push on people, Project Bluebeam. You know, they're warning people, don't believe it. Don't buy into their narrative. It's all connected. It's all a big scam. All of it. And isn't it the Pope that was in the window of the Vatican the last time he was seen? And it was a hologram. So they're using this hologram technology. That's what Bluebeam is. It's what it's going to be. I'm just speaking that it just won't happen. I mean, people don't need to be any more deceived than they already are, right? All right. All right, here's the papacy, the false prophet. It's the Holy Roman Empire reborn. November 3rd, 2009, the Holy Roman Empire was reborn. Most people missed it, just like they missed it in Jesus' day. On the front of the building of the EU, the European Union, is a statue entitled Europa. It is a woman riding on the back of a beast. All right? Revelation 17. So this is their symbol. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. You know, I saw something today, and I thought, you know, if they change a law, they'd stop a lot of this garbage. There's a prison that's a transgender prison. Well, there's three women come up pregnant in this transgender prison. I'm thinking, you know what? If they'd make it a law that if you really want to be a woman, then you have to cut off everything. Let's see how many of them are really, really transgenders. Instead of they just want to rape women, or they just want to prey on women, like that high school student did in that school, raped that little girl in the bathroom. He wore a skirt to school and said he was transgender, so they let him go in the girl's bathroom, and he raped a girl. They went to somewhere else and did it again. That's what these people right here push. Their agenda. Right here. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. It's a spirit. They don't care about being women. They just want to rape women. It's sickening. That's why they want to push it everywhere. And that convinces me more than ever. There hadn't been a bigger antichrist than Obama himself that opened this door to let these atrocities come on the earth. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast. You know, he wears those red shoes for a reason. They are made out of human skin, of children. All the Hollywood elites have them too. Plus, they have red rings they wear that it's part of children. These people are sick. They are so deceived. I don't know that they can come back from this. I think they've already sold their soul to the devil. I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. This is the Antichrist system. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. Purple and scarlet. Bishops. Is it the bishops? What's the other one? There's a bishop. not the priest, bishop and something else, that wear the purple and the scarlet, decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. They're filthy. They're so filthy. I'm thinking, you just can't. We just never thought we'd see this day. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs and of Jesus. Martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, that they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sitteth. The city of 7 hells, Rome. And there are 7 kings. 5 are fallen, 1 is, another is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the 8th, and is of the 7, and goeth into perdition. And the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind. They are one in their nastiness. I'm just thinking, I just, you can't even think in your mind as a Christian the heinous things that we don't even know yet that is going on and what they've done. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength to the beast. See, they come together for a short time for their wicked agenda, and they hate each other, but they have one common goal. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for his Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. And he saith unto me, The waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. The Catholic Church is ruled like an icon over generations. It's not called the Holy See. And the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree, and give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. The Vatican. In fact, the Vatican has, you know, the phallic symbol. It has the circular thing that's supposed to be represent the female. And it has all these creepy, whatever they are, men looking down and observing. It's just how filthy they are. Anyway. All right, with that, I want to turn to Daniel chapter 2. Verse 31. Y'all there, 231. Thou, O king, sawest and beheld a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest still that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. All right, this is Babylon, the Nebuchadnezzar statue he had the dream of. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold, and after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. The fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all things shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with my clay. Which I really, my personal opinion is this is transhumanism, trying to mix clay with iron. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. See, Satan, the serpents, after the seed of the woman. The woman with the stars could be any woman. Even though it has the 12 stars on her head, Israel, that's where the lineage came through for the Messiah. But he's still now fighting against this, not Jesus, but against his body, against his seed. See, we're now part of Jesus. So the serpent's going after, that's what's happening. They want to exterminate, especially any Christian on the earth. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And is it any wonder with the big deal about the snake venom? Who showed up in the garden? The green man? The seed of the serpent? In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. You don't have to be concerned today about what the White Hats are doing, what the Alliance is doing, what President Trump is doing. God's standing there. God is doing this. God is bringing it down, and it takes as long as it takes. It's been difficult. It's been painful, but God is doing this. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it brake in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. All right, I'm going to give you a little history about the European Union. All right, the European Union, the Vatican revised the Holy Roman Empire. Nebuchadnezzar's dream revealed the statue that represented empires that ruled the world. The golden head is Babylon, 604 to 539 BC. The silver arms, Medo-Persia, 539 to 331 BC. The brass belly is Greece, Alexander the Great, 331 to 197 BC. The iron legs was Rome, 197 B.C., they were around during the time of Jesus. And then the clay and iron toes is 800 A.D. until the second coming of Jesus. These empires have attained world domination. The Holy Roman Empire was born on 1225-800 B.C., called the Union of Church. It has always consisted of two rulers, a political leader and a spiritual one. The Pope is the spiritual leader. We know that we're on the verge of the government of God coming to destroy these empires and cause them to crumble in pieces to the ground. Just like I read to you. It's going to happen. It don't matter what anybody says. It doesn't matter what programmers say. This Antichrist system is at this moment and has for the last 6,000 years made war with the Lamb and the saints. He went after the lineage of Jesus, and now that he was already born and coming to the earth, now he's after the sons of God. Here are some of the other notable things about the European Union. One, their money is the euro, has the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire on it. The very first one was Charlemagne. Second, their prize that they give out is called the Charlemagne Prize. Germany is the home of Charlemagne, the wound that wouldn't heal. The Charlemagne Page is a magazine they put out. Brussels, Belgium is the capital of the European Union. That's where CERN is, I think, right in that area. The capital is called the Charlemagne Building. Their flag has the Virgin Mary with the 12 stars over her head. From what I understand, Israel actually has 13 tribes. Our calendar actually has 13 months. The nations involved in the European Union must apply to membership. It is an alliance of church and state, a union of politics and religion. Outside the building is Europa, a woman riding a beast. European Union states are no longer sovereign. They come under the rule of the European Union Constitution, which is the Nazi world order. Since all nations of the world have not signed in, it has now been called a treaty. It does not allow Muslims. I don't know why. Just this information alone and how long it has been around, basically since the garden in some form or another, convinces me that the days that were spoken to Daniel are truly years and not just days. You know, Christians, they think, it's just this week. In the future, it's going to show up, you know, just 7 years. No, it isn't. So Antichrist is risen out of the revised Holy Roman Empire, which is different from the Roman Empire. All right, now I want to read something to you. Some of this may be a little hard to hear, but I want you to hear what they've done all throughout. All right, this is 1260 days, years, prophetic meaning by, I don't know how you spell it, Ulrike. U-L-R-I-K-E. Ulrike. All right. Biblical use of the 1260 days, years. Daniel 7:25, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until time and times and the dividing of time. See, they've changed everything. They've changed our calendar. They've altered our Bible. They, you know, there's not anything they have not altered. They have not changed. Daylight savings time. You know what? The two movies talks about this stuff. There, it's got Nicolas Cage in it. National Treasure. A lot of this came out in those movies, some of this stuff. All right, a time equals a year, times 2 years, dividing of times a half a year. So 360 times 3 equals 180, 1,080, and then 180 equals 1260. All right, Daniel 12:7. And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand, his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever, that shall be for a times, times, and a half. When he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. All right, Revelation 11:2. But the court which is without the temple, leave out and measure it not. For it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall be tread underfoot 42 months. All right, Revelation 11:3. And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. Okay, you might look at how many years is that, all right? All right, 42 months. 42 times 30 is 1260. 203 score, or 260, is 1260. 203 score. All right, Revelation 12:6. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her. There are 1,203 score days. Revelation 12:14, and to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into the place where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time from the face of the serpent. Revelation 13:5-8, and there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. The same power depicted as controlling religious affairs for 1260 years will rise again, its deadly wound healed, together with the power of the dragon, talking about the revised Holy Roman Empire, and force of the second beast. The word the world will be brought to a crisis. Says, see Revelation 13. Therefore, it's imperative that we understand this issue. You see what Revelation 13, what chapter that is. Oh, it's about the rise of the beast system that we've read many times. Yeah. About the beast rising up, the four beasts. Okay, the combo beast. All right. How did the writings of the reformers interpret these 1260 days, years, question mark? The reformers looked at prophecy through the historicist method. This method is not very popular in our day. Today we have preterism, which teaches that most of prophecy has been fulfilled way back in the past. We have futurism, which teaches that prophecy will only be fulfilled at some time in a future date. All right. In contrast, historicism teaches that biblical predictions are being fulfilled throughout history. I agree. A divinely predicted chain of events leading us into the future. The great prophecies of Daniel span time from the Babylonian Empire clear down to the restoration of all things at the end of time. Revelation prophesies the history of the church from the apostolic era to the future restoration of all things. Historicists teach the year-day principle. In prophetic language, a day of symbolic time represents a year of actual historic time. The time, times, and half a time, 3.5 years or 1260 days, and a 42-month time period, which occurs 7 times in Daniel and Revelation, is understood by historists to be 1260 literal years fulfilled in history. The day-year principle is an old principle already recognized by the Jews even before the time of Christ. The Jews also identified the four beasts of Daniel as Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. However, the historicist interpretation developed later as the book of Daniel was unsealed. The early church believed Christ would come soon. They did not anticipate that we'd still be here 2,000 years after Christ's first advent. The long periods of time were sealed, but as early as 1190 A.D., one can find the 1260 days spoken of as 1260 years. An example is Abbot Joachim of Florus. Throughout the writings of the Reformers, we see the growing conviction that these 1260 day years pertain to the papacy's reign. Walter Brut, a 14th century Welsh Lollard scholar, a follower of Wycliffe and a graduate of Oxford, wrote that the woman of Revelation 12, our true church, had fled to Britain where the 1260 years the true faith had been maintained. That's the woman that was running from the beast, years the true faith had been maintained. He adopted the year-day principle for all prophetic time periods. The 1260 years were the papal persecution, just as the 10 days or years in Revelation 2:10 referred to the Diocletian persecution. It says here, see for reference, the Dawn of the Reformation, Volume 1. All right, John Napier, 1550 to 1617, was a Scottish mathematician and devoted Protestant, writes in his plain discovery of the whole revelation of St. John in his Scottish script. In 42 months, 1,203 prophetical days, 3 great days and a half and a time, times and a half a time mentioned in Daniel and in the Revelation are all one date signifying the Church of Christ fled into the wilderness. Every one of them, 1260 Julian years, and the whore who is in the Revelation is styled spiritual Babylon, which is the Vatican, is not real Babylon, but the very present city of Rome, Vatican. There is one particular apostolic kingdom who is the chief and principal of all antichrists, and is that great antichrist whom Paul calls the man of sin. All the reformers attributed the 1260 day years to the domination of the papacy. They had varying starting and ending dates, and it wasn't until Napoleon's time that 1798 become a recognized endpoint for the 1260 years. I didn't know this about Napoleon. He actually come in and routed all that out. King Edward, FRS, FSA, 1735 to 1807, was educated at Cambridge, and he wrote, "It's not the papal power at Rome, which was once so terrible and so domineering, at an end. But let us pause a little. Was not this end and other parts of the holy prophecies foretold to be at the end of the 1260 years? Was it not foretold by Daniel to be at the end of times, times, and half a time?" Do you remember the other article I read to you about where the one that was writing this article said that there were two times? 1260 years was the time of Daniel, and there'd be another prosecution or persecution that would come. That's what they're talking about here. Was computation amounts to the same period. And now let us see, hear, and understand. This is the year 1798, and just 1260 years ago, in the very beginning of the year 538, Belisarius put an end to the empire and dominion of the Goths in Rome. He had entered the city on the 10th of the preceding December in triumph in the name of Justinian, Emperor of the East, and had soon after made it tributary to him, leaving thenceforward from AD 538 no power in Rome that could be said to rule over the earth, excepting the ecclesiastical pontifical power. In other words, the end of the Pope. All right, David Simpson, 1745-1799, theologian, religious writer, educated at St. John's College, Cambridge, a Methodist, wrote, "It's not extremely remarkable and a powerful confirmation of the truth of Scripture prophecy that just 1260 years ago from the present 1798, in the very beginning of the year 538, Belisarius put an end to the empire of the Goths at Rome, leaving no power therein but the bishop of that metropolis. Read these things in the prophetic scriptures, compare them coolly with the present state of Europe, and then I say again, deny the truth of divine revelation. If you can, open your eyes and behold these things accomplishing in the face of the whole world. This thing is not done in a corner." All right, here's a counterattack on the 1260-day years. Indeed, the prophetic finger was pointing so strongly at the papacy that a counter-reformation was launched. The Jesuit order was established to undo the Reformation. Jesuits, Ribera of Spain, 1537 to 1591, and Bellarmine of Rome, 1542 to 1621, set forth the futurist interpretation of prophecy. I told you, when we was teaching Revelation, that's kind of where I started all of it, was about the futurist God of what had come from the futurist movement and how it had made the church weak and not expecting anything to happen unless they saw something literally happen in front of their eyes. They would not believe. And we're seeing it today. Bellarmine also dug up the concept of some ancients who had taught that Antichrist would reign for 3.5 literal years. He said Antichrist was one individual man, not a system. Even honest Catholics debated him, asserting that Antichrist is a system or organization or falling away. Bellarmine said that prophetic time simply denoted a unit, such as a day, a year, or a millennium, and generally sought to place the whole concept of prophetic time on a platform of confusion. That's what it did. It caused confusion. Yeah. Thus, the forces were set in motion to heal the wound. Textbooks on history were rewritten. Today, it is difficult to find the date 538 in the Chronicles of History. The capture of Rome by Belisarius is buried somewhere in the total conquest against the Goths. What happened to the historic interpretation of prophecy, which gave the Reformation its fire to stand against the oppression of the papacy? Historic interpretation of prophecy has basically been removed from mainstream Protestantism. The Jesuit, futuristic, and preterist interpretations have almost totally swept the field. This was something which had to happen. If the wound is to be healed and the whole world turns to the papacy as predicted in Revelation 13, we have now reached a time when the Counter-Reformation has almost completely wiped out the prophetic interpretations of the Reformation. The papacy, the papal supremacy is once again coming into being. So actually what happened in 538 and 1798? 538 marks the establishment of Justinian's newly codified Roman law in Rome, with its authority in the hands of the church to be the supreme authority on spiritual truth and to punish heretics. It also marks a transition period where the papacy, now sitting in the seat of Rome, which emperors have deserted, is gaining freedom from imperial control. Prior to this, it was emperors that called church councils and passed edicts. But now the West was breaking free. Not immediate, not complete, but yet the year marks an important transition is taking place. See, that's what's been going on. That's what Nazism is, this complete control over everyone. You have no rights, no anything. All right, first let's look at a little history. By the end of the 5th century, German rather than Roman rule existed in Italy, Gaul, Britain, Spain, and most of North America. The power of the Roman emperors was restricted to the Eastern Mediterranean, henceforth centered into Constantinople, not in Rome. After years of turmoil resulting from attacks from various tribes, Italy was experiencing a measure of restoration of peace and civilization under the strong rulership of the Gothic Theodoric. So we enter this era with the city of Rome being under German or Gothic rule. Theodoric had been educated in Constantinople and followed many Roman ways, but in the latter matter of religion, the Gothic Theodoric was, first of all, an Arian. But he was very tolerant. Arian, who's the Arians? Nazis. Yeah. But he was very tolerant to differing religious thought. Catholics, Arians, Jews were all able to follow their differing religious beliefs. Now consider Justinian, Emperor of the Eastern Roman Empire, with headquarters in Constantinople. Religious tolerance was not part of his method of governing. He felt it his duty to control religion. This is just that same old Antichrist spirit. It's just bled itself down through history. Justinian used his legal powers to control the religious beliefs and practices of his subjects. He made Orthodox belief a qualification of full citizenship. Is that happening now? Those who refused to conform to the Orthodox doctrine were not allowed to inherit property. They could not give evidence in court against the Orthodox. Death by burning was a penalty for being a professed member of the Mancheneans. I guess that was the movement at that time. The reign of Justinian was a uniform yet various scene of persecution. He appears to have surpassed his indolent predecessors, both in the contrivance of his laws, the rigor of their execution. The insufficient term of 3 months was assigned for the conversion or exile of all heretics. Add if he still connived at their precarious day, they were deprived under his iron yoke not only the benefits of society, but the common birthright of men and Christians. The newly codified Roman law, which included some intolerant clauses against religious freedom, coming into practice in the city of Rome, was due largely to the work of this emperor. Historians tell us that Justinian codified the Roman law. He employed a lawyer named Trebonian, who, with a committee of 16 lawyers, gathered together all the numerous laws which had governed Rome over the centuries previous. This law was codified. Then an imperial script in 534 AD, the Roman bishop was recognized as the head of all the churches and given authority as such. Lives of Popes by Richard McBride, page 89, tells of Pope John II. 533 to 535 wrote to Emperor Justinian, and the emperor incorporated the Pope's letter as well as that of the canons of the first four ecumenical councils and his own, in which he acknowledged the Apostolic See as the head of all the churches in his famous Code of Justinian. We have made no delay in subjecting and uniting to your holiness all the priests of the whole East. We cannot suffer that anything which relates to the state of the church, however manifest and unquestionable, should be moved without the knowledge of your holiness, who are the head of all the holy churches. Justinian, according to Bruce Shelley in Church History, in plain language, never distinguished Roman state tradition from Christianity. He considered himself to be completely a Roman emperor and just as fully a Christian emperor. Here lay the source of his whole theory. Just a minute. Unity of the empire and the Christian religion. See, that's ecumenicalism. Wanting to bring all religions together, and they're all under the Catholic Church. I read you all that stuff from End Time Magazine. You showed you some stuff going on in a faith church. The state itself was conceived to be the only community established by God and embraced the whole life of man. The mission of the pious emperor as the maintenance of the Christian faith and its purity and the protection of the Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church from any disturbance. Archibald Bauer tells us, by an edict which he, Justinian, issued to unite all men in one faith, whether Jews, Gentiles, or Christians, such as did not, a term of 3 months embrace and profess the Catholic faith were declared infamous and as such excluded from all employments, both civil and military, rendered incapable of believing anything by will and their estates confiscated, whether real or personal. These were convincing arguments of the truth of the Catholic faith, but many, however, withstood them, and against such as did, the imperial edict was executed with the utmost rigor. Great numbers were driven from their habitations with their wives and children stripped. Others betook themselves to flight, carrying with them what they could conceal for their support and maintenance, but they were plundered of the little they had. Gibbons also tells in chapter 41 that as the conquest of the West progressed, Justinian was impatient to abolish the temporal and spiritual tyranny of the Vandals. He proceeded without delay to the full establishment of the Catholic Church. This recognition that made the papacy the head of all churches was incorporated into the Justinian Code. Thus, the Catholic faith was the official recognized by law as the only orthodox religion of the empire, and the two mighty forces of state and religion were legally united under papacy. We're talking the beast with the two leaders, political and spiritual. It's not just happening today. And everybody's, No, it's been going on for centuries. All right. However, the Gothic king Theodahad had was reigning in Italy. Therefore, the exaltation of the papacy in Rome was in decree only and could not be put into effect. Justinian's general Belisarius was fighting the Vandals in North Africa, recaptured Carthage, and put an end to the Vandal kingdom. And the plans were to also destroy the Goths. See, they're wanting to do the same thing now they were doing then. Agapitus I was pope for only a little over a month and was ordered by King Theodahad to go to Constantinople and tell Justinian not to drive out the Goths from Rome. Agapitus went to Constantinople where he died suddenly. King Theodahad made arrangements for the appointment of Pope Silverus. By this time, Justinian's armies had already taken Sicily and Naples as well as Dalmatia in the north. The Gothic nobles were unhappy with their king, Theodahad, and replaced him with Wigigus, who had proven himself in battle in the hope that he would save Italy from Justinian. Wigigus left a garrison of 4,000 men in Rome and took most of his forces to the north, Ravenna. He also took with him senators from Rome to ensure that Rome stay loyal to him. When Justinian's general Belisarius and his army came to Rome, and this is in 536, the garrison of 4,000, feeling they could not defend the city, simply took off, and Belisarius marched right in. The Pope, Silverus, and Senate begged Belisarius to treat Rome as an open city, but Belisarius turned it into a fortification. All right, a lot of this information comes from the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. Yeah, that I just read to you. All right, Witigis and his Gothic army then marched on Rome and besieged the city. The siege began in 537 and lasted over a year. Battles were fought during this time. It was also during the time that Pope Silverus was accused of plotting with the Goths and deposed. Silverus was banished to Petora in Lucia, but was still the official pope till November of 537. Vigilius was put in place. Vigilius became pope officially in November 537 and ruled till 555. It was in 538 that Witigis, the leader of the Goths, finally withdrew his armies that were besieging Rome and marched northward to Ravenna, the Gothic capital, and the Romans hot in deadly pursuit. Thus it was in 538 AD that Rome was won. Okay, it was General Belisarius who was by command of Justinian took over Rome from the Goths. Though the Goths were not driven out of Italy till years later. Some will argue that because of the Goths were not yet driven out all of Italy, the date isn't relevant. Okay, let's see. The imperial administration law were reintroduced. Now Justinian's code, formulated a few years earlier, could take effect in Rome. The Pope could authorize religious matters and take care of heretics. So even though there was still political unrest and turmoil in the country of Italy, in 538 marks a transition point in the powers of the papacy. There was a political vacuum in Rome which the Pope began to fill. It was his beginning to being the leading power operating as the continuation of the Western Roman Empire. The authority of the papacy began its 1260 years of rule in 538 when Rome was conquered and the law of Justinian became the law of Rome. The law gave the Pope his authority. All right. I still got just a little bit here. I hope you are seeing what I'm seeing. All right, now what happened to the law in 1798? Popes had faced bad times before. What was different in 1798? Not only was the Pope taken captive in 1798, but a new set of laws was established. Napoleon coded a whole new set of laws. The codified law of Justinian had been the Roman law during all those centuries, but in 1798, the code of Napoleon becomes the law as it affected the papacy. All right, in consequence, every other temporal authority emanating from the old government of the Pope is suppressed and it shall no more exercise any function. Bill number 9, the people of Rome cast off papal yoke. Thus we see the official rule of the papacy for 1260 years, a rule authorized by Justinian's law and evoked by Napoleon's laws. Napoleon placed the Protestants on a parity with Roman Catholics and took away the primacy aspect of papal leadership. This is marked in history as the birth of a new era. The rule of the Catholic Church, working through monarchs and aristocrats, was over. The democratic gospel brought in by the revolution up to the dependence of the people. The schools were taken out from under the jurisdiction of the church and run by the state. That was another mistake. According to Bruce Shelley in Church History in Plain Language, Napoleon had the good sense to work out an agreement with the Pope. But the church had lost forever its position of power. France and the rest of Europe could never return to a society held together by an alliance of throne and altar. That's the two. That's the Antichrist, false prophet. Shelley said the church had lost its power forever, but prophecy says the wound will heal and the world will once again be herded into a society held together by enforced devotion to throne and altar. This is that second part from that other article I told you about, where he says what he's talking about in Daniel is the holy people were not the holy people of this day. It was the holy people of that day under the papacy. All right. To understand the issues facing us in the last great battle for our souls, we need to know what the issues are. Be not deceived. Scripture has plainly told us who the contenders are, that we might not be deceived. All right. In the reign of 538, the Ostrogoths was broken in the city of Rome, and Justinian's newly codified law was its clauses giving the papacy authority to enforce one religion on all was established in Rome where the Pope resided. All right, the code of our Lord and the most sacred emperor, Justinian. I'm not going to read all of that. All right. All right, I guess that's all of that. Anyway, we see the rise of the Holy Roman Empire is what we are experiencing. Okay. But you see here how we take the scriptures and we put it in our little world and our little time and think it all fits, and it doesn't. This is the history of the earth, the whole 6,000 years. All right.